Okay, I'm here with Boyd Haddon today, and we're going to start by discussing your work as the Water Master of Union County. Mm-hmm. So I'd like you to just kind of start from the beginning and let me know how you came into this position and what it entailed.
Okay. Well, it started in, we were living in Pendleton at the time, and I went to work as an assistant water master over in Umatilla County in Pendleton. And then, I worked for them, I think it was 3 years. And then the water master in Union County was going to retire. And so I had to go through a series of tests. Actually, what it involved was highway engineering, because they hired us under an engineering position. And then later on, they changed it to water masters. But I moved back from Pendleton, and I took over here in 1970.
So at this time, did you have a local office?
Yes.
Kind of a headquarters where
yes.
you worked out of? Where was
right.
that at?
It was in the, with the U.S. Geological Survey. And their office at that time was located down on East Adams. I can't remember the address, but it was on East Adams in the Grand.
Okay.
And then later on, they built the 4-H and what is the name of that building out there? Not in Island City.
Ag and Soil.
Yeah.
Building. I'm not sure what the full name of it is.
I'm not either right at this second, but then when they got that completed, we moved out there. And I had an office of my own out there, and USGS was out there, Soil Conservation Service, the 4-H.
In that first location that you were in then, did you have more than yourself in the office? Did you have a staff?
I didn't have a staff at that time. The fact of the matter is, I never had a staff all the years that I worked for Water Master here in the Grand. And they kept promising that we'd get an assistant, but I had one, I think, for one summer in the 70s. When we had a real dry year, they let me hire a local person, and they were with me for 3 months, and other than that, I was on my own.
Just a solo operation?
Solo operation, right.
So tell me about a typical day then for you. What did your job entail?
Well, of course, in the summertime, it was strictly water distribution, and that was from all the streams and the river and wells, the irrigation wells, and some domestic wells were involved. But the typical day started in going to the office, and then if anybody called with a complaint, then you had to go out and take care of that problem. Or
what kinds of things would they complain about?
Well, if they had a prior water right and somebody else was using the water, I'd have to go out and shut off the newer user and then get water down to the prior rights.
Okay.
And then it just, well, it varied actually from day to day. We had gauging stations on the river.
And what's a gauging station?
Well, it's a monitoring system that had a recorder set in a building, and it measured the amount of water that went by. It was operated 24 hours a day. And at one time I had, seven gauging stations. And then at certain times of the month, you had to go out and pull the record that was in the recorder and bring that in. It had to be worked up in the field, and then it went to the Salem office. And at the same time that you're removing the recording, the record from the recorder, well, we had to measure the water flow. Mm-hmm. And that entailed getting out a water meter, putting on your boots and measuring the width of the stream and measure the depth. And then there was a meter that went on a rod, and you had to count the clicks. There was I could show you a water meter, but it's kind of hard to explain. And anyway, you count the clicks as this revolution went on, and then you'd have to put that on a sheet of paper, which had the depth plus the width plus the how many clicks you had of water flowing, and compute that, and then you get the amount of water that was flowing in the river that day. Mm-hmm. And of course, with six gauging stations, it kept you plenty busy. And then
where were the monitoring or the gauging stations located?
Oh, let's see, there was 1, 2, 3 there was 3 on the Grand Round River, 2 on Catherine Creek, and 1 on Willow Creek. And those are all within the valley here.
But they're still pretty spread out, so?
They were spread out,
so yeah. Time-wise, that would take quite a bit of time.
It took quite a bit of time. Mm-hmm.
Right. Can you tell me what was the significance of knowing the revolution? Is that what you call the revolution of the water?
How fast the water was flowing, and when you computed all this together, the width and the depth and how fast the water was flowing, well, then you come up with the stream flow, how much is flowing that day in the river. And then you compared that to what was on the recorders. And this was done, of course, 365 days a year. But not the measurements, but the recorder. And then that was all computed, and at the end of the water year, which ran from October to October, from October 1 to September 30th, was the water year.
Why the difference in a regular calendar for a water year?
That I couldn't answer.
Okay.
I mean, that's the way it was done, it was set up by U.S. Geological Survey. It was actually who started the water recordings, and the state of Oregon, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, all of them went with the water year. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Geological Survey set up. And then you'd have to go out, if you got a complaint, then you'd have to go out and measure small streams and see how much water was flowing in there, and then distribute the water out according to water rights. The oldest in time got the water first. And the oldest water right we recorded in Union County was 1863. Mm-hmm. And that's over on Little Creek, over by Union. But then after you compute these flows, then you knew who would get the water and who wouldn't. And then you'd continue on and go to whoever was using the water, and if they were to be shut off, well, you'd shut them off, and so it could get down to the oldest rights. Mm-hmm.
Do you recall who had those oldest rights?
Oh, gee whiz. Zaug.
Zaug?
Z-A-U-G-G. Oh, my land, what was his name? He passed away just a few years ago. He was 100 years old.
Wow.
I'm not going to remember. One time he called me from over at Union, and he says, I want to use the water. said they've got it all, they're using it all above me. So I went up there and I started shutting everybody off. And it took better than 24 hours. It was real low stream flow. But it took better than 24 hours from the time that I shut the people off up above for the water to get down to his place. So I went out the next day and asked him if he's getting his water, and he says, "Oh yeah." And I says, "Well, where have you got it going?" And he showed me a little spot there that he was irrigating. And he says, I says, "How come you wanted the water?" I says, "You normally you don't use it." He says, "Oh, I just wanted to see if you could shut everybody off so I could get it."
Oh no.
Yeah. He says, "Go ahead and turn it back on up above again." He just checking me out.
Checking the system.
Yeah, right. Work. See if it worked.
Now, how did the other people react to being shut off?
Well, they knew that they were going to get shut off because it happens every year.
Mm-hmm.
And because the stream flows around here are without any dams, the water just drops out and then you start. But normally, I set mine up on a rotation basis. You try to rotate what water you have, and most of the time the users would call one another to say, "Hey, I'm done today, you can start irrigating tomorrow."
Mm-hmm.
And it worked out real well that way. But then once in a while you'd get somebody that would be mad at the next guy, and so then you had to go by strictly by water rights.
Mm-hmm. Did it ever escalate into a major problem or a legal issue?
Yeah, it does. Fact of the matter is I had one state representative, one state senator, and a local county commissioner who every one of them was going to take me to court because I'd gone and shut their water off. And when they got through, none of them ever involved a lawsuit. They found out that water was distributed by water rights, and that was the way it was. And one representative from, at the time, state representative, was when I was over at Pendleton, I went and shut his water off, and he told me, he says, "Well, you've done the wrong thing." He says, "I'll have your job." And I told him, I said, "Well, go ahead, I'll find another one." And it ended up that he found out that I was in the right and he was in the wrong, and he never talked to me for over 7 years.
Wow.
I'd have to talk to somebody else any time I wanted to turn his water off.
Mm-hmm.
And finally I met him up at Willow Lake one time, and he apologized finally. And then I was going to throw one of the county commissioners in jail because he dammed up Catherine Creek, and I told him to remove the dam, and he wouldn't do it. So I went to the district attorney, and which we have to go through, and wanted to issue a warrant for his arrest. And they wouldn't issue the warrant. So I went to Salem, and Salem called back up here, the district attorney, and told him we wanted a warrant so we could arrest him. And they said, "Oh no, we can't do that. We can't do anything about it." So it finally ended up that, at the time when this happened, the state engineer called the landowner and told him that he's going to have to remove those boards. And he did. And then he had a big laugh out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thoroughly disgusted because I was going to throw him in jail, have him thrown in jail. Because this went on for, I don't know, it must have been a week, 10 days, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was using water he wasn't entitled to.
So how were those initial water rights established?
They were established through the courts in 1909. And people had to go to the a designated attorney and prove when they started using the water. And then this was all went through a court proceeding, and it was decreed the state of Oregon that these were the water rights.
So it's really a first come, first served?
It was, that's what it was.
You know, that's how it came
about. Okay. Right. And then after that, instead of going, the water rights that were, came in later, they had to go through the Water Resource Department in Salem, and they had to send in a map and the date that they started using their water, and then this permit was issued by the state of Oregon with a date, and then that's up to the present time, that's the way it goes now.
Are there fees required for permits?
Yes, it started out, when I first started, I think it was $30 to file a water right. This is for...
Annually?
No.
Or you mean
no,
just for...
just one time.
A one-time fee.
A one-time fee. And then when I left, it was something like
$900. Wow.
Plus, you had to pay a surveyor to draw the map of where you're going to use this water. And I have no idea what the price is now, but I'm sure it goes up every year. And then it changed, in the late 70s and early 80s. A lot of people went to wells. There were very few wells in the valley at the time, but now a lot of people have given up their old decreed water right and transferred it to wells because they have a known source of water.
Mm-hmm.
And there's wells out here that are, they'll run 1,700, 2,000 feet deep, the irrigation wells. Man, out around Imler in that area, the biggest share of those are artesian wells. And it's warm water.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, let's see, whose well? I think it was Eisminger well out at, yeah, it was Eisminger, drilled one around Imber. And at 1,700 feet, they brought up wood.
What does that mean?
Evidently, at one time, 1,700 feet down, there used to be a forest or something.
Oh, I see. Wow.
Because we sent samples off to the, Oregon, University of Oregon, I guess it was. They wanted some of the wood samples that came up.
Mm-hmm.
So they figured it was just an inland lake in here.
Wow. Now when you were taking measurements daily with the at the monitoring, at the gauging stations and so on, how far back does data go? How long have people been taking those sorts of measurements on the stream?
Oh, let's see. I think we went back to 19, it was around 1909 on some of them, on the Grand Round, the Grand Round right now, I think it was on, what there must be, let's see, I've been retired 13, 11, 12 years. 11 years, and at that time I think we had, it'd be close to 90 years doing this water recording.
Mm-hmm. And how significant are those recordings?
People use them all the time. They take the average over the years. and well, it's actually a comparison. And for water distribution purposes, we can almost come up with a stream flow for the average year, and you'll know, actually, you'll be pretty close to what your workload would be for that summer. And then the fishermen, they call all the time. They want to know stream flows in the lower Grand Round when they're steelheading, or the Wild River. Mm-hmm. Or you can call almost any place in the state, and you can find out the daily stream flows, mm-hmm. whether it's up or down. One big significance of it that we used it for predicting floods. It compared the snowfall to what water was in the rivers, and then you can make a comparison and figure out what you might have for distribution during the summer. Mm-hmm.
And have there been any major floods in Union County area?
Oh yeah, there was. The one that I remember the most, of course, I wasn't working for the Water Resource Department at the time, was the 64, it was in December of 64 and in January of 65. And it, that was covered the whole state of Oregon. Washed out the John Day Bridge on I-84. There was all major highways were out, inland roads were out. And there was quite a bit of destruction.
Mm-hmm. And was this something then that was predicted? I mean, could you tell that this was coming?
Pretty much so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even though this was before you were working as a water master, mm-hmm. did you say? Okay.
Right.
But that sort of data did then help you to keep people prepared?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. And that's the recording station too. After about the early 70s, they put in a telegraphy system,
mm-hmm.
and
must be the twins.
They put in a system that you could call the gauging station, and it would tell you what the flow was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it'd tell you the height of the river, and then we had charts that after we computed the stream flows, you'd come up with an average figure, and you would know, say if you had a 7.1 reading on a gauge at the radio at the station, then you could go to what you recorded all year or over the years and figure out what 7.1 was, how many cubic feet per second were flowing in the river.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had it set up that and when it reached a certain point, then this was the beginning of a flood.
Mm-hmm.
And then people were warned, of course, by radio and everything, to be on the lookout for floods.
Mm-hmm. So the locals then were really dependent on your forecast,
mm-hmm.
but not only for flooding purposes, but for recreational.
Right.
Purposes also with the fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then in the wintertime, streams most of them would freeze over during the winter. And then we had to go out and chop holes in the ice and take our measurements so we knew what the stream flow was underneath the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the springtime arrived, we would know whether we were going to have major ice flows and this type of thing.
Hi, buddy.
So in the wintertime, your job was quite different than...
Yeah, right.
Taking measurements would be obviously a lot different with ice over the...
Oh, yeah. It was different. And then we, in the wintertime... We had snow surveys, which started out, we were using old Army equipment or skis to get to the gauging, or get to the snow tunnel sites, and then...
You mean physically skiing into them, or...
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right.
Okay. seem to be in good shape to do your job.
Oh, yeah, right. And then later on, while they went to helicopters, well, snowmobiles first, and then helicopters, they found that we could actually hit most of the gauging stations in 2 days, where if you went on snowmobiles, well, you were looking at 5 days. And if you had to ski into them, well, you were looking anywhere from 7 to 10 days mm-hmm. to do the snowshoe days. And then that, all the snow survey stations that we had were put in by the U.S. Geological Survey. And their equipment went to, or their, whatever we found on the snow courses, the amount of snow, and that went into Portland. And they computed stream flows and that. Mm-hmm. And again, we were looking at probably 50 to, it'll be more than that, but it'll be more like 75 years worth of snow information. So that
the snow stations were different from the water?
Yes.
They were mm-hmm. different parts of the
earth. Oh yeah, they were all in the mountains.
Okay.
Like, here we had them at Beaver Creek Reservoir and up on Taylor Green on Catherine Creek. And then we had several of them over in the Umatilla district. We took care of those. Several in the Anthony Lakes region and Tollgate region. So we were actually, the snow surveys were actually for the, well, it'd be for Baker, Union, Wallowa, Grant, and Malheur. No, Malheur was a different one. That was taken care of by people in Ontario. But it was vital information.
And that was collected solely by you also, or did you have a team?
We had a team, the USGS, and I usually two of us went on these snow surveys.
Worked together on this?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then after I took over Wallowa County, and let's see, that was about the middle of the 80s, I guess it was. Then we also had to take care of all the snowtails in Wallowa County. And then they came up with, later on, they came up with a lot of what they call a snow pillow. And it was set up underneath a tower with automatic recording, and they could, by radio telemetry, they just call into the snowtail, and it would tell them the amount of snow that was on the ground, and then they could compute over the years and the information that they gathered. They would know how much moisture was in the snow, how deep the snow was, how much moisture content. And then every once in a while, we'd just go out and check these just to make sure that the snowtails were still all operating.
Mm-hmm. So that was a strictly computer-generated information?
Mm-hmm. Right.
From there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So then at the same time you're doing the snow, though, you still happen to measure the water in all the other places. This, mm-hmm. this work went around the clock.
Well, actually, we normally on most of the gauging stations, excuse me, we'd go out and the measurements would be made once or twice monthly, actual measurements. But the recorders, we had to go out and check and make sure that they were operating. Plus, then you had all the bookwork and paperwork and everything else in the office. And we had lots of people come into the office wanting to check water rates because of sales of property, or people buying property. They wanted to know dates and where the water rights were located and how much water they might be entitled to.
So how many hours do you figure that you spent out on the field and then in the office? What was that breakup like?
Well, it actually, you didn't know from day to day whether he's going to be out on call or whether he's going to be in the office most of the day. But I would imagine that, it was probably 60%, I would imagine, would be in the field and 40% in the office, somewhere in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm.
Now, how long did you do this job?
Well, let's see, 28 years, and call it 28 years.
You had mentioned before someone had retired in this area, so is this a position that is kind of a one-man show? So unless someone retires, there's only one for a whole area.
Right. Yeah, it's broken up by districts, and there was... When I first went to work, I think there was 12 districts in the state of Oregon. And then as the Willamette Valley started increasing population and whatnot,
districts in Oregon, and now there's about 18.
There's about 18 water masters.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And the Willamette Valley, Bend area, Pendleton area, usually had assistant water masters, but I don't know why they thought that we could operate without them. And I think right now that the water master down here now, the present water master, he does have an assistant, or maybe two. And then Baker, they finally ended up, I think they have two now, assistant water masters. So they're coming around, but still there's a lot of work that done in the field that should have extra personnel.
Mm-hmm. Was there any sort of extra training that you had to go to as the equipment and the kind of the modes of collecting data changed?
Yeah, we'd have a water master conference in Salem every year, and they'd call all of them. The water masters, assistant water masters down there, and we'd usually have a week of training. And then if something special came up that they would, sometimes they'd come out of Salem and bring the information to you, but most of the time they expected us to drive to Salem.
Mm-hmm.
And probably in a normal year, people from Salem, I probably wouldn't see them over maybe 8 or 10 times a year. And they said, well, listen, they always told us that if we don't hear from anybody in your district, you must be doing all right, so we're not going to bother you.
Okay.
But once in a while they'd get a letter from somebody would write a letter and say that we were speeding down the highway or something, and then we had to explain this. And
so can you think of anything that happened in your job that really just sticks out in your mind?
No, I don't. Other than people getting on the phone and calling you 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and wanting you to come out and try to settle their problems.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times when we have several irrigation districts, that the Water Master's jurisdiction ended at their point of diversion from the river. But these people would keep after you because they figured that they were getting the wrong end of the deal in these irrigation districts. So we'd tell them that if you want us to distribute the water inside the irrigation district, that you had to go petition Salem, and then you'd have to pay all the expenses to hire somebody to come in and do this. And normally, these people would back off and they'd finally work out their problems themselves. But a lot of times I'd go in and just call a meeting of the irrigation district, tell them what the situation was. Now, if you do this way, you won't have any problems. And we'd set up an actual time schedule that irrigator one would get water for a certain period of time, irrigator two would get it for a certain period of time. Because normally under an irrigation district, their water rights are all the same date. As long as you work with people and explain the situation to them, normally they're really good people. And I know a lot of times when I'd have farmers that think that they had a real problem, you just pick up the phone and call a guy. Because I've known a lot of them for years. Just pick up the phone and say, hey, this is what's going on. Turn your water off. Mm-hmm. And they'd go out and do it. But there are several instances that people, they didn't feel like that they were getting their share of the water. So you'd have to go out and measure their water and find out who else is using the water up the streams, and then go right back to the old adage that first in time is first in right. Mm-hmm. And after they finally got this through their head, then things would work out real well. And if they didn't think they were getting the right deal, instead of calling me, they'd call direct to Salem. Mm-hmm. Then my boss in Salem, he'd get on the phone and call me and say, hey, what's going on? Well, when you explained it to him, then everything was all right. He said, well, just go out and tell him. I said, well, I've told him. He said, well, go out and tell him again. Mm-hmm. And so then it started working out.
He really had a lot of, a big role in dealing with people.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, anytime the door was open in the office, you were dealing with people. Mm-hmm. Several of them. Well, then you go back to the appraisers, go out and appraise a piece of property. They come in to check to see if there's water rights here on this piece of property, what the dates were. They always wanted the map, so here you were, go through these big volumes that showed the water rights. Mm-hmm. And then run copies of that and give it to them. Same to the assessor's office. They'd call down, want information. The attorneys would call. So it kept you busy.
Mm-hmm.
Real busy, in fact.
Can you think of any specific equipment that you used over the years that was particularly challenging or interesting to you?
Well, probably on snow surveys is when we had the most problems with the old equipment that was from World War II.
Mm-hmm.
That the counties had, and breakdowns, this type of thing, the old equipment. I know one time we were on a snow survey up out of Pendleton at Battle Mountain, and we had an old, what they call them, I think it was, what did they call that old vehicle? Anyway, it was kind of like a four-wheel drive. And we always took snowshoes and skis with us. And we got in almost to the snowtail, and the machine broke down. So we had to ski on in probably half mile to the snowtail, and then we came back, and we had to ski all the way back down to the highway.
Oh, no.
So that was, man, that happened quite often. But then we got into helicopters, and of course that was the nicest part of the snow surveys. Because mm-hmm. you'd get to go out and fly all over the mountains and see all the wildlife and everything else, and cut down on your time, and because they kept extending out. Well, from here, I think the farthest flight we had was over to Battle Mountain out of Heppner. And then we took over all of the Elkhorns, and we went, was it John Day? Just above John Day. We had snow surveys over there. And then in the Wallace, so we went over on the Snake River, we went to the Inaha, all the Wallow River Drainage.
You mentioned wildlife, and it sounds like you spent a lot of time up in the mountains and in the streams and and in the water all around. So tell me about some of the wildlife that you encountered over the years, if any.
Well, just a normal run, it seemed like, with deer and elk and coyotes. One bobcat, I think. He used to sit on the stream bank and watch me out there measuring water one day.
And how did that make you feel?
Oh, it didn't bother me, because they're not that big anyway. But then coyotes, we used to see them quite often. They came down to on the riverbanks, and they'd sit and watch it for a while, and then they'd leave. And in the summertime, when you're up checking stream flows, even though there was no recorders on a lot of the streams, we still had to go up and take measurements on them. Mm-hmm. And I remember one time we were up, up towards Beaver Reservoir, and this coyote was out there chasing grasshoppers. You'd see in the tall grass, and you'd see the grass move, and then pretty soon you'd see him jump up, and he'd come down chasing grasshoppers, because I went up to see what he was doing. And then another time I was watching a golden eagle had killed a groundhog. And there was a coyote trying to steal the groundhog from him. And I wish to this day I'd had a camera to take pictures of that, but I can still see a vivid in my mind that this big old eagle, he had the groundhog in his claws sitting on the ground, and this coyote, he just kept going around and around and around him. And every time he'd get behind him, the eagle, when he couldn't see far enough, well, he'd kind of jump up and turn. And this went on for the whole, I bet, 15, 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And finally I had to leave, so I don't know how it came out. But then you saw all kinds of things like that. Wintertime, you'd see bald eagles up the Grand Mound. So it was an interesting time. Mm-hmm. And I have taken lots of pictures of old flood pictures and pictures of wildlife and stuff over the years. That saw one big old bull elk up the Grand Round one night. He was about 30 feet off the road. He was standing in it was kind of cloudy, and about the only place there was any sunshine, and he was standing between two trees and the sun was shining on him. And I took pictures of that, and well, I took several pictures of him, and brought them down and had them developed, and they lost the pictures.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I just see that in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But and then, of course, you saw all kinds of fish. Salmon, steelhead, and people. You always saw people.
Mm-hmm.
Stop and visit and wondering what you're doing and why you're doing this and why you're doing that. So it was a...
Were these people just up hunting, fishing, or...
A lot of times they're, well, normally not hunting, no. Fishing, yes.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know what you're doing out there, why you're basing water and this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then even if we were along the road, just a tourist going by would stop and wonder what was going on. And during high flows in the rivers, we used weights to take the meter down, and they varied in from 15 pounds up to a 100-pound weight, which were lead weights to hold the meter from going at an angle out from you. It held it down so you can get the depths in the river. A lot of times people wondering how they'd stop and say, how's fishing? And so, and then we see people out now fishing on, like on Catherine Creek, or driving around. And you'd be driving by in your state rig, and you'd see them scatter, and then you knew that they were just out there illegal fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was interesting. It was also a lot of work.
Did being out there inspire you to want to come out and do some fishing, or did you want to stay away from the water?
Just stay away from it.
Spend too much time in it on a daily basis.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and even the snow was, after you was on snow surveys and stuff, like you didn't care to go out and wade around in it,
mm-hmm.
play in it.
Mm-hmm.
But after I retired, I went back to doing a little fishing and wandering around hunting in the snow and this type of thing. But I don't miss the job any, but it was fun while I was doing it.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall any sorts of changes as far as pollution in the streams or decreases in certain fish or any other changes like that over the years?
Well, pollution-wise, they really didn't, when I first went to work for them, they really weren't monitoring too much for pollution. And then the last probably 10 years that I worked, yes, DEQ came in and done the pollution monitoring. And there were certain areas, yes, that they were having a pollution problem. But when they started in fencing streams and keeping cattle out, this type of thing, they're still they set up a daily maximum load that they in the streams, and if it exceeded that, well, then they went out and DEQ did and was looking for these points of pollution. So yeah, it's changed. Fishing wise, fisheries, I don't know as it's changed some due to dams that have been built, and but it seems like now that the last 5 years probably I worked with in the water, that they have Fish and Wildlife, the National Fish and Wildlife, all set up monitoring systems, and then they started in fencing off streams and doing this and that and another thing, and it seems like it's that the fish runs are they're starting to pick back up. Mm-hmm. Plus they went to hatchery fish, and, but it's going to continue to be a problem.
Mm-hmm. So you say you don't miss the work?
Not really.
No.
I don't miss the work. I miss a lot of the people that I work with.
Mm-hmm.
The farmers and ranchers and and people that are using water.
Mm-hmm.
But
you still see a lot of those people? Or?
Oh yeah, I see. Yeah. Mainly downtown, I run into them or go out to Island City to have drink coffee or something like mm-hmm. that. But I don't see them on a regular basis like I used to, but I don't miss paperwork. It was terrible, the paperwork. And it just continues to get more and more all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it was a good job. One that I enjoyed because if I wanted to be in the office, I could be in the office. If I didn't want to be, I could leave and go out and do any kind of work that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you always had something going on. Sometimes it was 6-7 days a week, and other times it was the office was open 5 days a week. Especially, well, when you get into floods and any major problems, it was 24 hours a day and 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.